Thank you, choir. Thank you, Christian. Beautiful. So beautiful. Always a delight to be here with our congregation, with this congregation. First, let me say how grateful I am that the Greenville and Fellowship invited Sarai to be here this morning. It is not lost on me that my sermon title is Loving What Is. I say that because in our nation, we have many young people for whom this is the nation they grew up in. This is what is. And so I celebrate the Greenville Fellowship for loving, valuing, and appreciating these wonderful young people and the many gifts that they bring to us, the first and foremost of which is the gift of themselves. You are to be applauded. Thank you. In her book, Loving What Is, author Byron Katie, and I should tell you that Byron Katie is a female author known to her friends as Katie. Byron Katie claims that it is our thoughts and not reality itself that are ultimately the cause of our emotional suffering. This is not to deny that there are tragic and unfortunate events in life, but Katie makes the point that it is our thoughts about life, particularly the judgments we make of situations and others and our worrying, that ultimately lead to our distress and anguish. What is more, Katie claims that what is, and that arguing with it, denying it, agonizing over it, wishing it were different will not change reality. It is, she says, like trying to teach a cat to bark. Now, towards the end of my sermon, I will also talk about social justice and how that is impacted by this idea. We are filled with dozens of thoughts every day, thoughts of judgment and worry, painfully denying the current reality, insisting that there must be a different truth, and failing to appreciate the value of what we have. She gives these examples. People should be kinder. Children should be well behaved. My husband or wife or partner should do this. The Sunday morning speaker should be more eloquent. Okay, I made up that last example, but you get the idea. Katie's approach is called the work. It's a matter of simple inquiry. And this is important. It does not claim that one's beliefs are true or false. You can keep your beliefs. It encourages, however, to go deeper, allowing us to seek out greater truth and ultimately to be it at peace with reality, rather than suffer the constant bombardment of thoughts, anxious thoughts about the way we wish things were. Katie's method confronts the thought behind suffering. And she does this by a series of four questions. And I'd like to introduce these four questions by way of an example. When I visited her website, I found a short video clip that I believe is helpful. It's called The Other Dogs Don't Like Me. In the video, a dog is being interviewed. Through a voiceover, the dog complains loudly that the other dogs don't like him. This is the thought that is causing the dog so much suffering. The interviewer assures the dog that no one is trying to change his mind when the dog says, "The other dogs don't like me." And then the interviewer asks the first of the four questions. When you say the other dogs don't like you, is it true? Is that true is the first of Katie's questions. The dog being interviewed barks loudly, showing the strength of his feeling and his belief. Okay, says the interviewer, who then asks the second question. Can you be absolutely sure that that's true? There is a pause, and that's P-A-U-S-E. Yeah, okay. The dog is now quieter, showing some amount of hesitation, even uncertainty, with the idea that the other dogs don't like him. The interviewer then asks the third question. How do you react when you feel that thought that the other dogs don't like you? Oh, the dog whimpers. The suffering we can see is found within the thought that the other dogs don't like him. And finally, the interviewer asks the fourth question. Who would you be without that thought? The dog barks joyfully, loudly, enthusiastically without that thought. Some people describe Katie's work as finding freedom. The dog being interviewed has found freedom from the thought that the other dogs don't like him, and it is freeing indeed. This is a simplistic example, and yet I suspect every person in this room has had just such an experience. And I suspect that a majority of us suffer from the belief that we are not liked or that we disappoint others. There is freedom to be found. Oftentimes, as a result of doing the work, that is asking the four questions, there is a turnaround, meaning that we find that reality is different than our thoughts led us to believe. Using the example of the dog being interviewed, the turnaround may be that the other dogs do like me, but worry got in the way. Perhaps a real-world example is in order. I suspect that most of us have asked ourselves the following question: why didn't he return my phone call, or why didn't she respond to my email? What story, what suffering thought do we tell ourselves when this happens? Oh, he's angry at me. She never did like me. He must have not liked last week's sermon. How do Byron Katie's questions help us? When you think that he is mad at me, ask yourself, is that true? Maybe. The second question, can you be absolutely sure that that's true? Probably not. The third question, how do you react when you feel that thought? Upset, worried, anxious. The fourth question, who would you be without that thought? A much happier person. And so if we can free ourselves from these debilitating thoughts, we can relieve ourselves from a lot of unnecessary, self-induced suffering. As with any exercise, I imagine that it will take a lot of practice. But what I appreciate about Byron Katie's work is its simplicity. As I said earlier, each of us has dozens of thoughts daily, thoughts and ideas that are the root of our own suffering. As Katie says, we are the storytellers. We are the projector of all the stories. And the world is projected through the image of our thoughts. Here are a few of the people in our stories. Mother. Father. Husband, wife, partner, children, sibling, friend, neighbor, minister, congregant, roommate, boss, teacher, employee, coworker, teammate, salesperson, customer, men, women, authority, God. Sometimes we project our unhappiness on one of these. Sometimes, though, the work we need to do, the suffering we inflict on ourselves, may not be the result of a worry, but it may be the judgment that we make towards others. We may believe that the action of another person is the root of our unhappiness. Now, let me say that again. I think that's an important point. Sometimes the work we need to do, the suffering we inflict on ourselves, may not result from the worry, but it may be the judgment that we make towards others. We may believe that the action of another person is the root of our unhappiness. The examples are numerous. In doing her own work, Katie created the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. This one page will help anyone get at the root of who disappoints them. Who angers, confuses, saddens, or disappoints you, and why? What is it about them that you don't like? How do you want them to change? What do you want them to do? What is it that they should or shouldn't do, be, think, or feel? What advice would you offer them to change? Do you need anything from them? What do they need to do in order for you to be happy? Katie then applied this worksheet to her ex-husband. Yes, it was a lengthy exposé. Without going into detail, though, Katie realized that she allowed her judgments, her complaints about her ex-husband to contribute to her suffering. Not unlike doing the work, she began to question if her bitter thoughts about him were actually true, or if her bitterness came about because she was thinking about someone she had not yet forgiven. More importantly, she discovered she was much happier if she let those thoughts go. If she no longer needed anything from him, that she no longer wanted him to change. And finally, the turnaround came when she realized that her issues with her ex-husband revealed insightful and meaningful opportunities for her own spiritual growth. What an amazing turnaround for her. Perhaps working with ex-husbands, ex-wives, and ex-partners is too easy. I get that. What about current relationships? In a different example, Mary complained that her wife, Susan, had an irritating habit. And Susan, Mary said, should stop doing this annoying thing that she does. I won't go through the complete set of four questions, but the bottom line is that our partners, even our friends, have annoying habits, or so we think. The last two of the four questions in the work asks, how do you react when you think that thought about your partner's annoying habit? And who would you be without that thought? It is as if we need our partner or friend to change in order for us to be happy. When we release that thought, we release the anxiety that goes with it. There is something to be said for loving our partners for who they are, not for who we want them to be. Our suffering is the result of believing that people or circumstances should be different than they actually are. One of the key outcomes of doing the work, of asking the four questions, is that we may create for ourselves a view of the world that is closer to the real world than our judgments and worries may tell us. We may come to accept that life is what it is. We may discover that he doesn't dislike me. We may accept that our friends are just fine the way they are. We no longer feel the need to change them. As I stated earlier, in the work that Katie does, she often asks folks to look for a turnaround. Sometimes the turnaround means that instead of wanting others to love us more, we see the value in loving ourselves more. Loving what is often means first loving ourselves, accepting ourselves, appreciating ourselves. And with this understanding, we are less likely to blame others for not loving us enough. We are less likely to need others to change in order to contribute to our happiness. The work of Byron Katie can be used with everyday experiences, but it can also be used with serious illness and grief, both of which may send many of us into a tailspin of emotional suffering and despair. This is understandable. Oftentimes, our minds and hearts become clouded with anxious thoughts and judgments about the unfairness of life. But perhaps we can use the work, the four questions, to gain insight into what is actually true, to recognize, to no one's surprise, that we are happier without the judgment and worry, and to accept that illness and even death are part of life. And yes, even to accept that life is not always fair. For everyday events and even serious situations, The work, like peeling an onion, helps us peel away the layers of our projections. The work helps us to dismantle our judgmental and anxious thoughts and find greater insight and acceptance of each situation. As Unitarian Universalists, our third UU principle, and the Unitarian, if you don't know, the Unitarian Universalist principles are immediately preceding hymn number one in the hymnal. Our third UU principle states, we affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. As Unitarian Universalists, we do a good job of accepting many outward forms of diversity. You heard that this morning in Drew's opening welcome. And I recall at a few Board of Trustees retreats that I've participated in, how we learn to accept the different styles of our different leaders, recognizing the unique qualities and gifts that each person brings. What would it mean, though, to believe similarly of those not in our congregation? Do I need the salesperson to behave a certain way for me to be happy? Must we be anxious or make judgments about those who believe that their religion is the only true religion? What would it mean to replace judgment and worry with acceptance and even loving what is loving each of those individuals just as they are? Salespersons are sometimes grumpy, and some of our best friends and family members believe that their religion is the only religion. Can't we accept them for who they are? When I first considered this topic, loving what is, my first thought was this. As Unitarian Universalists, we are often advocates for change. As Unitarian Universalists, we care for and advocate for those who are less fortunate, those whose rights are denied, and for all sentient beings. From time to time, I give a sermon and advocate for political and social change as we work together to create and uphold the beloved community. As much as I advocate for change, though, I do not ever want to become that. I don't want that to ever become an avenue of despair. By agonizing over the political mess we are in, and we are in a political mess, by agonizing over who's in office, by agonizing over these things, I add to my own suffering. And practically speaking, I become less effective. But if I am willing to acknowledge what is, accept what is, even if I don't like it, I may then be in a better position to affect the change I wish to see in the world. In one of her examples, Katie says that we can wish all day long that we had not lost our job. Or we can accept what is and then ask the question, what do I do now? Similarly, we can accept that injustice exists in the world and then without agony or suffering, without skipping a beat, we move into action. In our nation, in our communities, within our families, and among our friends, let us first appreciate the others for who they are. Let us recognize that what is, and let us see deep down that worry only takes away from our happiness, and that changing another person will not add to our happiness at all. Let us love what is, and let us begin by loving ourselves. May it be so. So. Thank you. I think there's a real opportunity to put some of this into practice, and so I asked this morning if I could lead a guided meditation with the congregation. And I'd like to do that at this time. I'm going to invite you to get comfortable in your pew, to put your feet on the floor, to pay attention to your breathing. You may close your eyes if you wish. In your life, can you identify a thought or belief that causes you anxiety? Perhaps it is a feeling of judgment towards another person or group. Perhaps it is a situation that has you worried. I get that. Take 15 seconds and identify a thought or belief that causes you anxiety. Now, considering the thought that gives you anxiety, ask the question, is what you're thinking true? And the second question, can you be absolutely sure it's true? Now take a little longer and ask yourself, how do you react when you feel that thought? And now, who would you be without that thought? Finally, is there a turnaround? Is there something that you see differently now? I now invite you to open your eyes and return to this space. Blessed be.